It's perhaps no wonder that in Douglas's world, the essential, profound meaning of the universe could be calculated to be a very straightforward 42. This has subsequently become such a celebrated number that I felt I had to ask how it came about.
Like any idea, there are lots of strands that lead towards it. Now, the thing was, I liked the idea of... there's almost a fairly sort of standard thing of, you know, some sort of pathetic punchline to, you know, somebody going off and seeking enlightenment. I mean, there are, the Buddha saying this, or the teacher saying that, that's kind of surprise at the end. I mean, I think there was even one, I was a great fan of Procol Harum. In fact, the idea for Restaurant at the End of the Universe actually came from a Procol Harum track called Grand Hotel. And then there's this story in one Procol Harum track about somebody going off to find a teacher on a mountain and asking for enlightenment. And so it's a well-trodden path. You know, what actually is the answer? So I started to thinking something along these lines, and gradually thought, well, that the answer... It eventually occurred to me that the answer should be a number, and that because it would be so completely inexplicable, but also so completely banal, that there was a good joke out of it. If you'd build it and build it and build it and build it and say, well, the answer is 42... Or it's a number. I thought that was it. So it was then a question of trying to identify the right number and find the number that the joke would be. And I went through a number of different thoughts because I was thinking, well, numbers are kind of neutral, aren't they? But actually, they're not. We do associate different things with different numbers. I mean, you know, 7 is meant to be a mystical number. 3 is meant to be a mystical number. There are all sorts of... So I thought, well, okay, so what sort of character of number are we going to go after here? And I thought, well, since the joke is merely the fact that it's a number, the number itself should be unremarkable in some way, because otherwise it might slightly deflect attention from the joke if people think that the number itself has any significance. That'll momentarily distract from the joke, because the number's got to have no significance whatsoever. So I thought, well, how do you define a number that's got no significance? Well, first of all, we'll say it's an even number. I mean, I know there are just as many odd numbers, but there's something about odd numbers, isn't there?
So they're more interesting.
So I thought the odd numbers are slightly more interesting than even numbers, so I'll go for an even number. So obviously it's not going to be a prime. Well, obviously all prime numbers are odd numbers, but I originated, got rid of primes, and also, you know, the sort of comedy writer's knee jerk, which would be to say, oh, it's 17 3/8, because that's obviously a funny number. So I was beginning to think about, you know, what constitutes a funny number that isn't a funny number, and then something began to swim back into my head. Because a few years earlier, I had been working as a prop borrower on one of John Cleese's video arts films. Now, for those who don't know, John had this highly successful company called Video Art, which still, of course, thriving. But he started it making training films, management training and so on and so forth. And in each case, the principles that any particular film would be about were illustrated by little sketches that John had written. They were very carefully crafted, of course, them being John. And anyway, I think the very, very first films he made on a sort of shoestring budget. And he gave me the job of being prop borrower because they didn't have the funds for a prop buyer. And so one of the scenes was set in a bank. And John is playing a bank teller who is not paying attention to the customer's needs. And so he's sitting there adding up a column of figures, and the customer comes to the window. John doesn't pay any attention to him. So eventually the customer moves on to the next teller, who treats him properly, deals with his problem. And then as the customer, I think it was Tim Brooke Taylor, walks back past John, John finally comes up with the figure which he was adding up. And I just suddenly remembered a bit of discussion having gone on in the lunch break about what will be a good number, what will be a funny number. And I tried to cast my mind back to what it was. And I wasn't even sure that I'd got it right, but I seemed to remember that the number that John came up with as being the right funny number to say as Tim Brooke Daly went by, I mean, this is terribly arcane, was 42. So I thought, well, I'm not sure if it's right, but that's the number I'll use. And it seems to fit all the criteria that it's just a very, very ordinary, unremarkable number. So that's it. That's where it came from.
But in headlines last year, in some way too arcane for me to understand, 42 was seen by some scientists to be indeed part of the solution to the universe.
Well, it was an approximation of the Hubble constant, which is a sort of measure of the distribution of stars through the galaxy. Through the is it star? Oh dear, I should know. I mean, the funny thing about that is that once you've selected a number and it achieves thereby a certain notoriety, of course, any other it therefore self-selects coincidences. So people will say, my God, isn't it extraordinary coincidence that the number crops up here, there, and everywhere, and people do all sorts of numerology on it. You know, if you add together the letters of somebody's name and all this kind of stuff. I mean, but the thing is, if it had been 37 or 17 or 28, the same thing would have occurred, but with a different set of phenomena. So it's all pure coincidence, and it's self-selecting coincidence. And the fact that it is an approximation of the Hubble constant, I think, needn't detain us.